All right, Matt. So in 3,024 years from now, life will either be really good or really bad. It'll be 50-50.
Yes, it will.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Getting a little rain here today.
Oh, nice.
We've gone from like 20 degrees to 60 degrees overnight.
Yeah, it was 83 here today.
Man, I need to move further south, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, you do. You do. We would love to have you, Matt. Come on down. But before we get into talking about how great the South is and really anger our northern listeners, we love you guys. We just got to talk crap. Anyway, if you want, please go over and check out patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. We have three different levels, and every level gets a bonus episode a week. It's a shorter episode, kind of on the same topics that we would do for Graveyard Tales, just may not have enough to make a full hour plus episode out of them. So go over there, check those out. But if you then move to our $5 and $10 level, they get those plus they get an ad-free audio and video version of the episode. If we have an ad that week, we put out an ad-free episode on Patreon for our $5 and $10 listeners. Mm-hmm. So we figure if you're, you know, if you don't like ads, then for a nominal amount, you can get ad free. But if you want to go up to our $10 a month Patreon, you get all that. Plus, you get our second show, Side Quest, which that is me and Matt in a different light. That's kind of like if you were hanging out with me and Matt at our house and we were messing around with each other, that's what it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty close.
Sometimes we play games on there. We play trivia games. Matt likes to make me look stupid. He doesn't try to. It just happens because I'm stupid. Or we do, like, we ate bad jelly beans one time when I gave him a quiz on a trivia quiz.
Yeah.
We drank weird sodas one time. I like to tell historical stories that I find interesting. Nothing to do with haunted stuff usually on that. Every now and then we'll get one that I did one on a cryptid one time, but there wasn't like many sightings or anything.
It is as mixed bag as it possibly could be.
Yeah, it really is. So if you want to just figure out what it would be like to sit around in Matt's living room with me and him sitting there talking crap, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
So that is Side Quest over for our $10 a month patrons. If you don't want to do that, but you still want to support the show, check out one of our sponsors. We put the sponsor link in our show notes with our discount code. If you use that link and the code and get you something there, they know that you heard about them through us, and then they will come back and sponsor another episode, which helps us out tremendously. It's between that and Patreon, it's what allows Matt and I to keep Graveyard Tales going and free for everybody. So if you want to help us out, please go check those things out. But really, Matt, that's all I got, because this might be a longer episode. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay. So this is going to be a fun one tonight.
I think so, yeah.
We're headed to a place that it smells like fudge, horse manure and lake air. Okay. And possibly the lingering presence of the dead. Okay. We're talking about Mackinac Island.
Yep.
And, you know, the thing, the crazy thing about Mackinac Island is there's no cars, no chain hotels, just bicycles and Victorian architecture, military history.
Yep.
And enough ghost stories to make you kind of look twice when you check out the mirror in your hotel room. Okay.
That's very true.
So, I mean, this is a spooky place, but it is a really cool place. I've never been, I've never met anybody that's been, but I mean, with the fact that there's no cars there and you just, you can kind of bike everywhere or walk everywhere, it's really cool. But a lot of history and a lot of haunted activity going on. So without further ado, we're going to get into Mackinac Island.
Yep. As we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information. If we talk about it, it is sourced and referenced down there in the bottom of the show notes. So you can see that we're not lying to you, at least not intentionally. If we're lying to you, it's our sources' fault. So
we're going to blame somebody else.
Oh yeah. Take it up with our sources. It's not us. But like Matt was saying, Mackinac Island is a car-free resort island, and it's located in Lake Huron, Michigan. And it's at the eastern end of the Straits of Mackinac between the state's upper and lower peninsulas. And what I'll get into where Mackinac comes from, but how come it's spelled like Mackinac?
I was going to ask you.
I know
you,
why, but okay.
I figured it's got to be Native American in some fashion.
It is, and I'll... when we go back in time, I'll get to that. But if I'm not mistaken, there is a Mackinac. And if you're from that area, if you're from Michigan, you can let me know. I need to ask my pastor because he's from Michigan and I should have talked to him about this beforehand. But because he always says go Big Blue and I just boo him. But anyway, I think there is a town there that is also called Mackinac, but it is spelled in a W. Like
I don't think it should be spelled. Yeah, I don't.
So at least I saw that somewhere. So if you're from Michigan, let me know why that is, because I didn't find why they're different.
One
is spelled different than the other. But to get back into it off my ramblings, Mackinac Island is known as a charming car-free summer resort destination where transportation is limited to horse-drawn carriages, bicycles, and walking. And it's famous for Victorian era architecture, including the Grand Hotel. And the island is celebrated for its homemade fudge, like Matt mentioned.
Oh yeah. Like what is it? It's like, is it Bear Tracks or isn't that the ice cream? Moose Tracks.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Yep.
No, it's one of them. It's one of the tracks.
It's a track.
Cause I can remember being younger and looking at it going, what is Mackinac fudge?
Yeah. What in the heck is a Mackinac? There's also the historic Fort Mackinac there, and they say it has, quote, stunning natural scenery within the Mackinac Island State Park. So, like I said, we're going to go back in time. So let's go back in time for a little bit. Now, for at least 1,000 years before Europeans arrived, the island and the surrounding straits were part of the homeland of the Anishinaabe peoples, especially the Ottawa and the Ojibwe, with the Potawatomi also in the wider region. Now, the Ojibwe name, Michilimackinac, M-I-C-H-I-L-I, and then Mackinac, is where we get the name Mackinac. So it's either Michilimackinac or Michilimackinac or something like that. But it's usually translated to the Great Turtle or the Big Turtle.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's supposed to reflect the island's turtle-like profile and its role in creation and spiritual stories. So Mackinac Island comes from the Ojibwe term, and it's spelled like they just took off the first part, the Machile or Makili part of the Mackinac, and kept the Mackinac. Now, the island functioned as a seasonal hub. People came to fish, trade, conduct ceremonies, rather than maintain a single dense year-round village on the island. Mm. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like we live here. It was we travel there and do things and then go back home. There are burial and ceremonial sites there, as well as stories about powerful spirits associated with the caves, the rock formations, and the surrounding waters, and is marked as sacred ground long before colonization happened. Now, oral histories describe the island as the first land to emerge after a great flood, and as a gathering place where offerings were made to powerful spirits associated with the island's rocks, caves, and waters. Now, Round Island, Bois Blanc Island, and Mackinac Island itself all served as sites for ceremonial burials and are explicitly described as sacred in the Anishinaabe tradition. So Mackinac was especially associated with the burial of chiefs and prominent families from around the Great Lakes. So remains on the island often represent high status or spiritually significant individuals. So Mackinac was used as a upper class burial for the Native Americans in the area. Burials were integrated into the landscape rather than segregated into European style graveyards.
Yeah.
So bones there were placed in caves, on high bluffs, and in soil near important paths and gathering areas. So there was not a "Here is our burial ground on Mackinac Island." It was, "We're going to bury our chief or our spiritual leader on Mackinac, but, you know, we're going to put him next to this path so we can see him as we walk by." Mm-hmm. And then the next guy, we're going to go, they're going to be in the cave. And so there's no specific area where you can keep from maybe unearthing a Native American burial, which right. comes into play.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to talk about that for sure.
Ceremony around death. So prayers, songs, offerings, and ongoing caretaking of graves was and is considered sacred responsibility, even though each Anishinaabe community has its own specific practices. Well, Skull Cave on the bluff behind Fort Mackinac is one of the best documented burial places on the island. Mm-hmm. For centuries, Native Americans placed remains in this small limestone cavity, so that by the 18th century, there were enough bones that a British fur trader, Alexander Henry, later wrote of finding a floor of skulls and bones when he sheltered there during Pontiac's War.
Yeah, so in 1763... Alexander Henry, who was an English fur trader, was out on a bad night and he had to take shelter somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it, like Adam said, it was in the middle of the Pontiac's War where the Native Americans tried to overthrow British rule around the Great Lakes. 20 were killed and one was scalped alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So Henry managed to escape to Mackinac Island. And since he was friends with the Ojibwe warrior named Wawatam, he was able to take shelter. And so he found this cave hidden away from in what is now the Mackinac Island State Park. And so he slept there.
Hmm.
And when he woke up the next morning and the daylight was coming in, he looked around and he realized that the floor of the cave was covered with human remains.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Bones everywhere.
Gee.
You know, and it's like, yeah, you wake up, you think, oh, thank gosh, I'm safe. Mm-hmm. You know, I get away from the cold. I'm in this little cave, and then you wake up and realize you've been sleeping on all these bones.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I would be glad that I, you know, had a safe place, or if I would run out of there freaked out and angry that I slept on bones.
I would run out freaked out.
Yeah. Yeah. True. True. Now, historical sources note that major parts of the current resort core are built over former indigenous cemeteries.
Uh-huh.
So a 1910 Wisconsin historical collection volume, for example, recorded that the site of the Grand Hotel occupies, quote, the Indian burial ground of earlier days, end quote, and that bones continued to be exhumed during work on the property. So it wasn't like a one-time thing. It was like you put a shovel in the ground and you dig up bones.
Yeah, pretty much guaranteed.
So if you have any question as to why Matt's going to talk about the hauntings that he's going to talk about, I think that should just answer it right there.
Exactly.
But I'm going to continue because I'm thorough and I don't want to just end there. Now, archaeologists and tribal representatives emphasize that the, quote, old city area of Mackinac Island is so layered with native burials that any significant ground disturbance risk disturbing graves, like I was saying. In 2011, excavation for a new hotel uncovered what authorities described as a, quote, massive burial site with human remains identified as likely ancestors of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of the Chippewa Indians, prompting negotiations, soil relocation, and reburial ceremonies. Now, about a half a mile north of Fort Mackinac and close to Skull Cave, includes native burials along with soldiers and civilians. So the cemetery dates to around the 1820s, and it's best known as a military graveyard, but it also holds indigenous peoples who lived on or around the island during the fort period. Now, historians believe there was an earlier post cemetery whose exact location has not been firmly identified. So this raises the likelihood that additional unmarked graves remain under later developments. So somebody could have developed something on top of another one of these graves and not known it. Taken together with sites like Skull Cave and the Grand Hotel Hill, this underscores how the ridgeline behind the fort is essentially a continuous mortuary and ceremonial landscape. Now, we kind of jumped all around there, but let's go back. The French arrival and fur trade crossroads. So French explorers and missionaries reached the Straits of Mackinac in the 17th century as they pushed deeper into the Great Lakes region of, quote, New France. Man, I'm glad it's not called New France now. That would be weird. You want to go up to New France and go fit? No, I don't.
Yeah, no. Right.
Jesuit missionary Jacques Marquet established a mission at nearby St. Ignace in 1671, drawing Huron and other indigenous refugees and cementing the straits as a key meeting point.
Ladies, your underwear and bras should not be the most uncomfortable things that you have to put on. And I know because I have Amanda and four daughters, that for a long time it has been, but it shouldn't have to be. And the ladies that are in my life have all switched to MeUndies. Okay. The feel free bralettes and underwear, they absolutely love them. From, you know, Amanda, I won't say her age, all the way down to my 14-year-old daughter. I mean, they all love them. And I've told the story many times on these ads about Miranda seeing my boxers sticking out from underneath my shorts one day. And she was like, I've got the same pattern.
Yep. You know? Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, they're comfortable. They're made of the ultra soft modal fabric that just, it moves and it breathes and it's soft and it's just, it's incredible. I love it. My girls love it. I know that you guys will love it too.
Yep, that's true. Ashley, there's a style that everybody, like for everybody, they have so many different styles. Ashley's tried several of the styles and every one of them she's tried, it doesn't matter, she loves it. It's soft and it's the only thing she wears. Like I said, they've got from classic black basics to the fun expressive seasonal prints, and they come in sizes extra small to 4XL, so you're gonna find a flattering cut no matter what body shape you have, I promise. And they have the signature softer than soft ultramodal fabric. It's breathable, stretchy, and super comfortable. They use sustainably sourced materials, and they work with partners that care for their workers. And if you're not happy with your first pair of undies, it's On Me Undies. And with more than 30 million pairs sold, 90,000 five-star reviews, that women everywhere are upgrading their underwear game. So right now, Graveyard Tales listeners can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping. All you got to do is go to MeUndies.com/graveyard and enter our promo code Graveyard, GRAVEYARD.
Right, that's 20% off plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/graveyard. Use our promo code Graveyard, GRAVEYARD.
By the early 1700s, the Straits were one of the most important transport corridors in the upper Great Lakes, funneling beaver pelts, European goods, and information between interior nations and Montreal. To protect this commerce, the French built Fort Michilimackinac on the island, which is present-day Mackinac City. There it is. Mackinac City, in my notes, is spelled MackinaW. So that's my question for anybody living up there. Is that a typo? Did they misspell this when I was looking it up? Or is that true, and why is it different? That's my question that I could not find an answer to, and maybe somebody who lives up there can tell me. But this was around 1715, with Mackinac Island itself used heavily as a fishing, trade, and spiritual site within that wider system. Mm-hmm. Then the British took control of the region after defeating France in the Seven Years' War, formalized in the 1763 Treaty of Paris. And under British rule, Michilimackinac remained a vital fur trade and military center, though indigenous nations continued to dominate local power and resistance, including its conflicts like Pontiac's Rebellion around the Great Lakes. Then we move to the American Revolution and the early U.S. period. So it says, although the 1783 Treaty of Paris granted the region to the United States, British forces actually remained in the Great Lakes forts for years. Only after the 1794 Jay Treaty did Britain fully withdraw, and the U.S. took official possession of Fort Mackinac and the island in 1796, turning it into an American outpost in a still heavily indigenous and fur trade world. So the island's economy in this era was dominated by the fur trade. They had powerful merchants there and mixed heritage families mediating between the Anishinaabe communities and American commerce interests. Now, when the War of 1812 broke out between the United States and Britain, Mackinac's strategic location made it an early target. So on July 17, 1812, British forces and their native allies launched a surprise attack and compelled the small American garrison at Fort Mackinac to surrender, often cited as the first land engagement of the war in the U.S. theater. So the British strengthened the island's defenses by building a new hilltop work that they called Fort George on the island's highest point. And in August 1814, American forces attempted to retake the island in the Battle of Mackinac Island, but were repulsed with casualties, including Major Andrew Hunter Holmes. The site later became known as Fort Holmes in his honor. Now, there were treaties and everything during the post-war transition. So the Treaty of Ghent was signed in late 1814, and it took effect in 1815, and it restored Mackinac Island to U.S. control. British troops withdrew. American authorities renamed Fort George as Fort Holmes, but they kept Fort Mackinac as a peacetime garrison. And then over the following decades, U.S. treaty policy forced huge land secessions from regional tribes. So in 1836, the Treaty of Washington ceded much of the northern lower peninsula and eastern upper peninsula, including the Mackinac area, to the United States. Now, as the fur trade declined in the mid-19th century, Mackinac Island's economic role began to shift. So Fort Mackinac continued to have military use until 1895, but more and more over that time, visitors started arriving in the summer on these big excursion steamers.
Mm-hmm.
They would come from Buffalo, Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, and they were drawn there by the cool climate and the scenery. By the Victorian era, the island was becoming a fashionable summer destination for wealthy Midwesterners. So the opening of the Grand Hotel was in 1887, and it was soon famous for its long porch and opulent style, it says, and it cemented Mackinac's status as a premier Great Lakes resort. Well, in 1875, largely to protect the fort and the island's natural scenery, the federal government designated most of Mackinac Island as the second United States National Park. You know what the first one was, Matt?
Yeah, we just talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was
the first national park in the United States?
I can't remember. We just had this talk.
Yep, we did. It was Yellowstone.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And it was on a side quest where we did a trivia game.
Exactly. Yeah. And I asked you that question.
You did.
Yeah.
And I think I got it wrong, too.
Because we had just talked about Devil's Tower, which was the first national monument.
Yep. So. Yep. Yeah, cool. Now, this status lasted until 1895 when the Army withdrew and the park was turned over to Michigan. It became Mackinac Island State Park, one of the earliest state parks in the country. Now, in 1898, the island government effectively banned automobiles because they were getting complaints from people that the early motor cars were frightening horses and it disrupted the quiet resort character. Mm-hmm. So that decision maintained ever since, and they allow like minor, narrow exceptions for that rule. It's become one of the island's defining features, and it preserves a streetscape dominated by horses, bicycles, and pedestrians. So one of the few places that you can go in the country, if not the only place, that you don't see cars driving around.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a pretty neat little place.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like it. I would like to stroll around. And you know, the scenery is just, it's gorgeous up there.
Yeah.
And one of the most amazing scenes, and you've all seen this. You may not have realized what you were looking at, but you've all seen that magnificent front porch on the Grand Hotel. It shows up in wallpapers for your computer. It's just like the random ones that it comes with. I mean, it's really, really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But along with that incredible porch comes some pretty incredible ghost stories.
Okay? Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's that massive white Victorian hotel. It looks like it ought to smell like lavender and money. Okay.
It probably does.
It really does. But the staff of the Grand Hotel over the years have reported hearing heavy footsteps in the hallways, lights turning on and off in unoccupied rooms, and that ever-present feeling that you're being watched, mm-hmm. especially while they're locking up at night. Now, there's a long whispered rumor that the hotel was built near native burial grounds. Adam touched on that earlier, but nowadays historians debate it. But whether or not it's documented to be, you know, a burial ground, the story persists that it was, or it possibly was.
Yeah.
So in 2011, developers of a new hotel discovered a mass grave smack dab in the middle of downtown on Mackinac Island. And they had planned to build a 3-story hotel on that site. Now, before the hotel construction started, there was a building that was known as McNally Cottage on that location. And
okay.
Some believe that the cottage was built on a Catholic cemetery of the St. Anne's Catholic Church, who closed their cemetery in December of 1851. So it's pretty old.
Yeah.
But there were many Native American members there as well. The police said that there were some bones belonging to animals, but there were also human bones. The human bones found were likely from the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of the Chippewa natives. And according to lore, they found so many bones and bodies during construction that they were unable to keep track of them.
Good grief. That's a lot.
Hundreds of bones were unearthed. Now, one of the most well-known spirits that haunts the Grand Hotel is the Lady in Black. And she is believed to be a former guest who never checked out. Some say that she appears to be like a lady in mourning. Well, I mean, you know, it's right on top of an old cemetery. Maybe it is.
I would think so.
But guests and staff have reported seeing the spirit of a young woman wearing Victorian-era clothing, wandering the halls, particularly near the hotel's grand staircase, or walking a large dog on the porch after dark.
That's interesting.
Ghost dogs got to walk too, y'all.
Yeah, they got to go potty too. Take them out to go potty.
And this one has even been known to get into bed with other living guests. Man, now these are the... We hear so many stories about haunted hotels where the ghost tried to crawl into bed with you.
Mm-hmm.
I could not abide this.
I know.
Don't crawl into bed with me.
That should be my safe space.
Yeah. I mean, when my kids were little, every one of them did it where mm-hmm. they come trying to crawl into bed with you in the middle of the night and scare the living crap out of you.
Yeah.
Or like my youngest to just come and stand there.
Ugh.
And you know, you're asleep and you're dreaming and you're like kind of coming out and you're like, is something? And you open your eyes and there's a child just staring right mm-hmm. at you. And you're like, wah!
You start dreaming that you're being stared at by zombies or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden it's just your kid, but you still scream.
I think that's 100% evidence of that third eye thing. You know, what do they call that? That lizards and cats have.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That senses shadow and stuff from above mm-hmm. to protect them from predators. I think humans have something like that, too, because you know I am asleep. My eyes are closed. I am in another state of consciousness, but I know if I'm being watched.
Yeah, okay? For sure.
I think that, and that's why people feel that weird sensation in some of these haunted locations, is that you may not be consciously aware of it, but whatever that is that we have that mm-hmm. says something's looking at you, you feel it.
Yeah.
You feel it. Now, another peculiar thing that's said to be haunting the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island is this sort of evil entity appearing to staff and guests as this black mass with glowing red eyes.
I don't like masses. Like, well, we talk about masses of mm-hmm. Entities mm-hmm. and I don't know why, but the fact that it doesn't have a form really freaks me out.
I think it tends to lean more toward the evil, you know, than yeah. just, oh, this is a spirit of somebody that died here.
Yeah.
A shapeless black form. Kinda, you know, that's really, there's
it
something
could be demonic. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something really way wrong. Yeah. And this one has glowing red eyes, which makes it that much more concerning.
That's even worse. Me. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't have any other shape, but yet it seems to have eyes, which means, hey, it can look at me and yep. it can see me run away from it. I don't care for that.
Yeah. It can watch as I scream and pee my pants.
Yeah. Yeah. A maintenance man was once working at the theater stage in the hotel. And according to his story, there was suddenly a black mass rushing after him and it knocked him off his feet.
No.
2 days later, he woke up from the fall and decided, I'm not going back ever. So not only did it knock him down, it knocked him out.
Yeah.
And he woke up 2 days later and said, I ain't going back. Yeah. If I see, now that's the thing. We hear stories about these black masses and these little mists and stuff, and they all move very creepily and slowly. This one charged him.
Yeah.
And had enough. Now, I don't know if it physically knocked him over or if it terrified him to the point that he fell over, but either way, he went down.
Yep.
And I'd be the same way. I'm not going back.
Mm-mm.
Now, another frequent sighting is that of an elderly man in a top hat that lingers around the hotel's bar and piano room. And he's typically reported to be smoking a cigar. But those who have seen him say that as you get closer to him, he just disappears.
Hmm.
And there is another one. And this one will be your favorite, Adam. The ghost of little Rebecca.
Oh, sounds fun.
And the story with Rebecca is that she passed away on the grounds and she haunts the fourth floor. And she has been spotted floating or walking through the halls and then disappears into nothing. One former employee described walking down a hallway after midnight and hearing what sounded like someone in hard-soled boots walking behind him, catching up to him. Mm. So he stepped aside to let them pass. Nobody passed.
Weird.
And now, so imagine you're working at night. Okay. This was after midnight. Mm-hmm. You're on the night shift and that just happens. You're like, man, when is sun up? You know,
come on. Yeah. Right.
I don't want to be here all night with this going on. Come on. So
dude, normally, like, I don't care. I would, you know, work at night. What my first job was a maintenance guy, and I had to work at night, and wasn't a big deal. But if something like that happened or continued to happen at night, I would be hesitant to go into work at night. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
it wouldn't just be, I got to go to work. It would be, oh no, I got to go to work.
Brings a whole new definition to the Sunday scaries, right? You know?
Yeah. Right.
I ain't going. I don't want to go. I'm calling in.
Yeah. You've called in every day this week. I know, but this time I'm calling in scared. I can't do it.
Now let's head over to Mission Point Resort. Now, before it was a resort, the land hosted a religious mission. And then later on, it was where Mackinac College was. And that's where we meet Mackinac's resident, lovelorn, heartbroken ghost, Harvey.
Harvey.
Now, Harvey's legend goes like this. Harvey was a student in the late 1960s, and he fell for a girl, as guys tend to do in college, and he fell hard. But she didn't feel the same way. And that winter, Harvey disappeared. When the snow melted, they found Harvey's body. Now, a lot of people believe that Harvey was so heartbroken that he committed suicide, but others think there might have been something darker going on. But the most chilling detail about them finding Harvey's body when the snow melted, they didn't find his skull.
Oh, no.
They could not find Harvey's head. And years later, a human skull was discovered and displayed at the resort. If you want a haunted resort, this is how you do it.
100%, yeah.
I mean, it'd be one thing to have like a femur bone or some finger bones, but a skull?
Mm-hmm.
You got to be kidding me.
Well, here's my question. How decomposed was he when they found him? Because
he would have been preserved to some degree, I would think.
Right. That's what I was thinking. So if he did it himself,
where did his head go?
How did he get, you can't go disappear your own head and then come back here.
Yeah.
So something tells me something's fishy about that.
And this is where Harvey's story really starts pushing into more of a legend than anything else, because there's no real conclusive story on if he did commit suicide, how did he do it?
Right.
Some say that he shot himself. Others say that he jumped off a cliff. Whatever. There's not a whole lot of detail. There's no news articles about it. So it really starts, as you dig, it starts to become more of a legend.
Yeah.
But again, Harvey's ghost persists. And guests and staff at the resort say that they will come across cold spots that are like walking into a freezer, chairs that slide across the floor in the theater. People will feel their hair pulled, and women report being lightly pinched. Lightly pinched.
At least it's lightly, and
yeah,
it's not,
it's right,
aggressive.
It's playful, okay, in some manner. And, you know, they think that, you know, Harvey's a little bit of a flirt, maybe.
Where is the pinching? Because that'll turn it from,
that's where I didn't find out, but I'm taking a guess.
It'll turn it from playful to creepy real quick.
Well, I mean, how flirty is it to come up and like pinch somebody like on the shoulder, or, you know, pinch them on like the elbow?
What grade are you at?
I think we know where they're getting pinched.
It reminds me of the South Pittsburgh hospital.
That's right. That was a full-on goose by that lady.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't know why that one always sticks in my head.
I know.
Like, I know. 300 and something episodes, and that's the one that sticks into my head.
Always. Always. But Harvey's ghost is typically seen around the resort's theater and the soundstage. And this is where people will report being touched or pinched. And, of course, it tends to happen more to women than it does to men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, along with Harvey's presence in the theater, his apparition is encountered throughout the resort grounds, around the cliff where he is said to have died, or wandering in the hotel halls. Paranormal investigations, including one done by ghost hunters, have come into Mission Point, and during one session, investigators captured unexplained noises and movement in the theater space that they associated with Harvey. Now, is it proof of something going on? Really, it's like, you know, some static and some infrared cameras coming on around 3 a.m. But the staff will confirm weird things do happen there.
Yeah.
You know, then they can't explain it. So Harvey's ghost seems as good of an explanation as any. Now, along with Harvey on Mackinac Island, there is a little girl spirit that has been affectionately named Lucy. And this one is full-on Victorian ghost child, okay? Witnesses describe a 12-year-old girl in a light sundress with curly hair. She's been reported near Anne's Tablet along wooded paths and peeking out from cottage windows. One couple say they saw her standing on a trail around dusk, and they assumed that it was a little girl that had been separated from her parents. So they said they turned for maybe 3 seconds to look around to see if the parents were close by, and she was gone.
Hmm.
There was no brush movement like a little kid and jumped into the bushes. There were no footsteps, just an empty trail. But here's the weird thing. There's no actual historical record that confirms who Lucy was, which kind of makes it creepier. But the story is that Lucy was visiting the island with her parents, and she became seriously ill. Her parents had to return to the mainland on urgent business and had to leave Lucy on the island because she was too sick to travel. Now, it's not clear if Lucy was in the hospital, but let's just assume that she was under the care of someone medical.
Yeah.
In the days while Lucy's parents were away, her condition worsened, and unfortunately Lucy passed away before her parents could return. Lucy's ghost is a regular occurrence around Mission Point, often appearing as a shadowy apparition on hotel room balconies. But along with that, guests have also claimed to hear the disembodied voice of a young girl calling for her parents. And most people assume that this is Lucy still searching for her family that left her behind to recuperate. Now,
that's so sad.
Yeah. This is, again, this is just the story. So if it's not tied to a known tragedy, who is she?
Yeah.
I mean, enough people have seen the spirit that is supposedly Lucy to at least feel like there's a little girl spirit, or, you know, looks to be around 12 years old and looks to be from a Victorian era. But why she would be there or who she really is unknown.
Yeah, and it, like, that makes you think, is it an entity just taking that form?
Yeah.
And it's not really a girl.
Yeah.
You know, is it another type of entity that's saying, hey, this is how I can get more attention and them not just take off running immediately kind of thing. Like we heard about the trickster spirits before that pretend to be kids in the woods, especially in Appalachia. And that's why you don't follow them into the woods.
Yeah. And something about calling out for her parents. You and I were talking about this before we started recording. You know, parent fear is different. Yeah. And, you know, parents will feel fear for other parents.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost always, if you see a child that falls down or that gets hurt, that parent instinct kind of goes, oh, you know,
yeah.
I want to go pick up and hug this kid because they're crying. They're not my kid, so I better not. But yeah. you feel it. You feel it. I mean, it's something you would do for your own child, and you want to comfort a child. So imagine being a parent and being at the resort and hearing a child crying out for her parents.
Right. You would go try to help.
Yeah, and I say that because Adam brings up the point about the trickster spirits. They would absolutely, you know, prey on that instinct by using a child voice and calling out as if a child is scared or in pain or anything, knowing that a parent would probably come looking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whew. It kind of gives you cold chills, don't it?
Yep. See, that's just another reason why I have a disdain for child ghosts.
That's right.
You know, just add that to the many reasons that Adam no likey kid ghost.
That's right. That's right. Next up is Fort Mackinac. Now, Fort Mackinac was established in the late 1700s, and it saw British and American control during the War of 1812. Soldiers died here, families lived here, and children are buried nearby. So visitors will report hearing marching boots on wooden floors, musket fire echoes when there's not a reenactment going on, and seeing figures in period uniforms vanish around corners. That's a weird one. It's very specific. You know, you hear people see soldiers all the time, but these apparently are like peeking around the corner and then, whoop, you know, go, you know, back away. Almost like they realize they're being looked at.
Yeah. Check to see if the coast is clear. Nope, it's not.
Yeah. Right. Now, one guide reported closing up after sunset and hearing what sounded like low male voices in conversation inside an empty barracks room. So he walked in and everything went silent.
Why would you walk in?
Well, again, if you think, oh, there's people in there that shouldn't be in there, you know, let's go in and investigate. And then you go in and you find an empty barracks and everything goes quiet. Like, uh-oh, shut up. Somebody's coming in.
Yeah.
I mean, that is some serious creepy historical ambiance, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Now, this next one is pure legend, okay? But the story has been around for a long, long time. Near Mission Point is a small lagoon that is known as the Drowning Pool. Now,
it's always a good name.
Yeah. Some say
a good band.
Hey, it is. Yeah. Some say that although it looks like a quaint little swimming hole or a fishing spot, it actually drops off to somewhere around 20 feet deep.
Hmm.
Now the story says that 7 women accused of witchcraft were subjected to trial by water at the Drowning Pool. If they floated, they were guilty. If they sank, well, you know the rest.
Yeah.
Historians say that there's little documentation to support that this actually happened on Mackinac Island. In fact, it doesn't take too much digging to learn that the cove that's being mentioned is actually part of Mission Point Resort and was built sometime in the 1940s or 50s, which is a little too recent for any actual witch trials.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they might still do it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, she's a hippie.
Yeah. Throw her in the water.
Hippies will float.
Yep. It's worked for witches. It'll work for hippies too, right?
Right. But despite that, visitors still claim to see shadowy reflections over the water at dusk and shapes that aren't attached to any living body. And as a water legend, they stick around. Every culture has a water legend. So,
well,
this was the one for Mackinac Island.
You got to think, though, this reminds me of a lot of them that we've talked about, that there is activity and then a legend comes up to explain the activity, not here is what actually happened and then the result of it.
Yeah.
It seems like people are seeing things and then they're like, well, what could this be? And, oh, well, it's got to be this. It's some guy came up with a weird story and then it stuck. And then they're like, but it wasn't built till the 70s. And they're like, that doesn't stop us. We're going to tell the story.
Why not? You know, and truthfully, believe it or don't believe it, as far as the legend goes, you know, the reports of the activity are there.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's happening.
Humans just, they want a story. They want an explanation, even if it's ridiculous and outlandish and historically inaccurate. They want that legend to go along with the weird experience that they have, you know? So I don't know. I think it helps people cope with what they don't understand. Now, Adam mentioned one of these places earlier, Skull Cave, and along with Skull Cave, I want to talk about another place, Devil's Kitchen. Now,
oh, nice.
If you want some natural features with some spooky names, Mackinac Island is the place, okay?
No kidding, yeah.
Now, Devil's Kitchen is a limestone cave blackened by soot. And it's not so much a cave, but it's a formation. Early legends claim that malevolent spirits lived there. The darkness and the weird acoustics alone are enough to kind of mess with your head. You know, they throw your equilibrium off. But the name Devil's Kitchen comes from early folklore rather than any actual physical danger. According to traditional stories, Native American legends describe the site as a place of spiritual significance where powerful forces were believed to dwell. Early European settlers later adapted these stories, applying the name Devil's Kitchen to reflect this mysterious and otherworldly nature of the formation. And, you know, there is some Native American lore that says this was a place like where the veil was thin, where spirits could cross over, you know, not evil in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
It was more or less a place where the spirit realm and the earthly realm, you know, things could kind of pass through, or spirits could leave their earthly body and pass through to, you know, the spirit realm. So it wasn't, you know, according to the Native American stories, it wasn't, you know, anything scary. It was just spiritual,
you know,
but leave it to some Europeans to make it scary. You know, they're good at that. But then we talked about Skull Cave and, you know, Alexander Henry waking up, you know, realizing he'd been sleeping on a whole bunch of bones. Now, tourists that visit Skull Cave do claim to have seen shadowy figures and apparitions that sneak along the cave walls, which does add an air of mystery and intrigue to the cave. And it tends to draw people, you know, tourists to visit.
Sure.
Now, these creepy encounters have fueled a lot of local legends and stories, which make the cave a hot spot for those that are kind of into the supernatural or the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
There's also said to be sudden drops in temperature and this unexplained odd feeling when you get close to the caves, almost as if the atmosphere shifts or thickens. And that leaves an unsettling yet compelling sensation that keeps visitors at a distance, contemplating the hidden secrets that might lie within that cave. But if you do manage to go inside, which from what I found, they don't let you go inside anymore. You can go around it, but I don't believe you're allowed to go inside.
Right.
So they say, you know, hey, if you realize that you've made it inside, then you're probably a ghost already.
True.
Yeah.
That may be why it feels different.
Now, we talked about cemeteries, and there's quite a few. And old ones that aren't necessarily marked cemeteries anymore. There's stuff sitting on top of them. But Post Cemetery near the fort is another hot spot. And visitors to the cemetery say they can hear faint crying, this sudden feeling of grief or heaviness. And some have even reported seeing the apparition of a woman in period clothing standing among the graves before disappearing. Children were buried there during harsh winters, and these illnesses wiped out an awful lot of folks. So just considering that, grief is heavy around Post Cemetery, and, you know, grief holds a lot of energy. And so even though Adam and I have talked about a lot of cemeteries that people just assume are haunted because it's a cemetery, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are. And we've talked about plenty that are not. But there's an odd energy about this one. And when you consider everything else that's going on Mackinac Island, heck, it may just be a ghost going from one end of the island to the other, just happens to be walking through the cemetery at the time. So, you know, I don't haunt this place. I just have to walk past it when I go to the other place that I haunt.
It's on my commute.
Yeah.
You know, what can I do?
Man, if I become a ghost and I still have to commute, that's going to suck.
You would hope that there would be some like celestial quick transport or something,
you know,
where I wouldn't have to make the hour commute in the morning.
There's not some high speed light rail that's available in the afterlife. What? Come on.
Right. Right.
Now, ghost tours operate on the island during peak season. They'll take visitors through the fort, Mission Point grounds, and along the pathways around dusk, you know, to tour around the areas that are most commonly frequented by paranormal activity. Investigators have used EMF meters, thermal cameras, digital recorders in multiple locations, and there's nothing definitive that has ever been proven. Unexplained audio anomalies and temperature fluctuations are so common, and it kind of helps push the legends and keep them going. But even skeptics will admit that the island feels different at night. And you think about this, there's no car noise. There's no hum of the city. There's just wind in the trees and horse hooves on pavement and the lake water hitting the shoreline.
An old fudge smell.
But because of that, your brain has a tendency to start filling in the gaps, you know, so it there's a lot of room for you to hear things or sense things that may or may not be there. But
especially if you're coming from Chicago or New York, where you're used to constant city noise.
Yeah. But, you know, one thing that I've always said, that places could be haunted as all get out. But with the way life is now,
mm-hmm.
as much stimulation is constantly around us, we just miss it.
Yep.
We miss it because it's subtle. You know, it is little things like, you know, changes in temperature and weird feelings and the hairs on the back of your neck. And when you're constantly surrounded with, you know, noise and lights and all kinds yeah. of things.
Constantly on your phone.
Yeah. Then you don't pick up on these things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people wonder, well, why do these paranormal, this always happens at night, you know, why are they? Because that's when it's quiet. That's when you can pick up on this stuff. There's no there's no noise and light pollution that could interfere with your ability to catch something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So is Mackinac Island definitely haunted? We don't know, but there's a heck of a lot of reports that there's got to be something going on there. And I mean, when you consider that it's deeply historic, it is spiritually significant to the native cultures. It's been
lots of burial.
Yeah. It's been the site of war and illness and heartbreak and isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a place where time just feels a little different.
Yep.
Okay. So you consider all that and you remove all the modern noise. You know, the past tends to come back knocking pretty loud. So, If you ever go to Mackinac Island, or if you've ever been, if you live in that area, maybe you've got some stories about maybe a trip there or a family member has been there and you live in that area, let us know. We would love to hear them. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group.
Let us know if you tripped over bones.
That's right. You find some bones. You went and, you know, tried to bury a cat turd and you found some bones, you know.
Yeah.
The best place, like I said, to do that is in our Facebook group. We've got thousands of people in there sharing stories just like this, telling jokes, even asking for help with paranormal stuff that's going on in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a private group. There's nobody in there that's going to make fun of you or act like you're a nut job. We just want to hear these really cool stories. Don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. There you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show, and that is where you can become a patron. And thank you to everyone who has donated their hard-earned money to the work that Adam and I do. We sincerely appreciate it, and it keeps Graveyard Tales going. We couldn't do it without you guys. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.